Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
It is 2019, and if you're like me and love talk radio, but you can't find anything worth listening to on the AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? See, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA, and is a .com, so we have it all, from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now, we have the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block, so sit back, pour some more wine, grab another box of chocolates, enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, Bob, what is it?
Is that Bob Marley?
It is Bob Marley. Very good. It is Could You Be Loved?
Perfect.
And I actually picked this for in deference to our guest tonight, because she and her husband were big, huge Bob Marley fans.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I figured, what better?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't even have to look very far, because there's tons of Bob Marley all over the place. So anyway, that's Bob Marley and Could You Be Loved? And hey, this is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio with Mr. Bob Brill, and on the phone with Miss Bobby Jean Bell.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy. And we have a great show for you tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. But, Bob, I have to tell you, I am so grateful that you finally got over to Smashburger. Smashburger, for those who don't know, Smashburger is a little hamburger joint that's all over the country now. And they have, and they make everything by hand, and it's cooked as you order it, which is really cool, because you get everything fresh and hot and juicy, and it's really good.
So you've been asking me to go there, and I love the burger, right? And so I was actually over in your neighborhood, and I told my wife, I said, we're going to go Smashburger. She goes, you're going to have us. I'm going to be there. I haven't been there for a long time. We're going to go, and I'm going to have a Smashburger. You can have whatever you want.
Yeah.
But I'm having a Smashburger.
There you
and
go.
When I got there, I didn't realize they had pretzel buns.
Yeah.
Got me good now?
Yeah, you are.
Okay. I didn't realize they had pretzel buns.
Uh-huh.
And I love pretzel buns, right?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, growing up a little kid, it was pretzels and a guy walking down the street selling pretzels. And so I had it. It was just like, wow. I was actually in burger heaven. I really was. And then last Sunday, we got to LA Live early because, you know, they were going to screen my short film Sunday.
Right, right, right.
And we got there early, and there was a Smashburger there, but they weren't open yet. So we had to go someplace else. But my wife looks, she goes, you'd have another Smashburger. I said, if they're open, I am.
They have a really good one. They have one with, like, jalapeno and...
Yeah, I just had the straight burger. I figured...
It's so good.
When I go to a new restaurant, it's for burgers or Italian restaurant, I have the simplest thing on the menu. And if you screw that up, I'm not coming back.
Right.
You know, so I always have, if I go to an Italian restaurant, I always have, I can't think of what it is right now, very simple spaghetti pasta dish. And so I went and just had a regular burger, one slice of tomato, and a little ketchup, and I was in heaven. Just burger heaven.
That would be a basic thing on a menu in an Italian restaurant, would be spaghetti and the meatballs.
No, actually, it's I can't think of what it's pasta and... tomato and a really light sauce.
Oh.
And I can't, for some reason, I'm drawing a dead blank right now.
I know what it is, and I'm drawing a blank, too. I'm looking at you and going, crap, I forgot you.
I'll look at it. You know,
I'll think of it halfway through the show.
The simplest pasta dish in Italy you can have.
Yeah.
And if you screw that up, I'm not coming back.
Pomodoro.
Pomodoro. There we go. Pasta pomodoro.
Jesus.
Spaghetti pomodoro. And... So that's easy. But so I did the same thing with the Smashburger, and my film looked great on the big screen.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
Yeah, it just looked outstanding.
I'm sure it did.
It was really thrilling to see.
Yeah, Bob did a little 10-minute Western. Nice. I'll tell you, Carol. Yeah. He did a little 10-minute Western, and it was really good. Yeah. It was really good.
It was for the Hollywood Real Independent Film Festival. They screened it last Sunday, so great. It was good. So
yeah, it was a fun movie to watch. And of course, everybody we knew was in it.
That's yeah. Cast the characters.
I mean, he has no shame in saying, hey, can you be in my movie and I can't pay you?
Actually, I paid them, and
I know you paid Heisner.
No, I paid.
He doesn't work for free.
I paid everybody on the crew, and I paid the cast. I paid scale, and I paid the crew a little less than scale, but that's okay.
Did they all get Turkish delight?
No, but I did feed them.
You know, Heisner, this is the only place Heisner comes and doesn't get paid.
Yeah, that's true. Eric Heisner was the character of Sundown in the film, and the lead character.
And he's actually, Eric's a really good guy.
Yeah, he's
a good actor, too. He's a good actor, and yes. he's a good writer, and he's pretty much
but
all around
guy.
But
he always wants a horse in the film, and I told him, no.
Well, you got one.
We got in, but I'm not going to let him ride it.
Well, you did ride it.
No.
Didn't he ride it into
No, jail? No. We mocked that up, and we had the horse coming in where we shot it from
the legs down. Yeah.
Because Eric wanted to ride a horse. And when you do a film, if you have an animal, whether it's a dog or a horse,
you have to have the
insurance. The insurance is pretty heavy. But on top of that, it doesn't cover anything but the horse. So if the horse throws the rider, you're still liable for the rider.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So. Oh, well.
Yeah.
That be life.
So Eric ain't riding a horse.
So there you go. Well, see, it worked because I thought he was riding a horse.
Yeah, see, there we go.
There you go. Bobby, didn't you think he was riding a horse?
I was sure he was riding a horse.
Okay,
I just can't imagine a Western without a horse.
Me too.
The optical illusion of film.
He actually did one movie with Bringus that they couldn't afford the horses, so they filmed it all without horses.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they alluded the whole time that the horses were tied up behind the horses.
You're going to have to call Eric after the show.
I love Eric. He's such a fun guy. Anyway, we have a young lady sitting in our studio tonight. She's written a book. And it's a very personal journey for her. Her name is Carol Graham Pereira. See, I just I get all tied up in knots, and I can't do it either. The name of her book is A Death with Dignity, Helder's Story. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, Carol Pereira? See, you get the clap. Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself there, Ms. Pereira.
Well, I have four children, and I grew up in Los Angeles, California. I'm a native Californian, and I worked in the law firm industry for about 25 years in management, all the while raising my children. And we lived in La Crescenta for the last 18 years.
How did you and Helder meet?
Well, there is a story. we had a mutual friend, and we didn't know it was a mutual friend. It was a real estate agent. And he was looking for a house for me, condominium. Found a condominium, and I said, you know, I really liked it, but I just don't like the carpet. And he told me, well, you know what? If it's the carpet that's the only problem, then I've got a great carpet cleaning company. And so I hired Helder to come and clean my carpets, and I remember the day when he walked down the sidewalk to meet me at the condominium. I hadn't moved in yet, and there was something about him, and I want to say it was love at first sight. It really felt like love at first sight, and I asked him to give me an estimate, and he did. I thought it was way too high. and
it was.
But I liked him, and so I went ahead, and you know what? The carpet didn't come clean, and so I had to have him come back again.
That was the excuse, right?
Yeah. That's what it felt like.
That was purposeful on his part.
Yeah. So
did you wonder, how does this guy stay in business?
Yeah, it was really bad carpet.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was really bad. And I actually ended up taking all the carpet out and replacing it. But that didn't end our relationship. Then we started dating.
Wow. And it went on from there. And you guys were married how many years?
23 years.
23 years.
And when did, I guess we should probably tell a little bit of the story that it's about Helder's final day.
His fight, well, 12-year fight with
with
cancer.
And tell us a little bit about when did that happen as far as you guys realizing and how did you start dealing with it?
Well, when he was first diagnosed, it was a shock because it was the last thing. I mean, he's a healthy guy, 43 years old, does every sport you can imagine, dirt bike riding, snowboarding, wakeboarding. We had a boat, and he did not seem to be sick at all. And but he did have blood in his stool, and he said to me one time, you know, first having four children, I said, oh, you must have hemorrhoids. And then he had a more extensive a procedure done, and they said you've got a tumor and you have cancer, and it was a shock. And what turned into be we thought was going to be just, you know, stage one cancer. You've got a tumor. Mm-hmm. We'll get it out. You're a young guy. You're healthy. You don't appear to be sick. Within a year, it turned into be stage four cancer. It had already metastasized. And so from that, every year, except for 1 year, but every year he had a surgery. It had metastasized somewhere else in his body.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's just incredible. How do you deal with something like that?
It was a way of life. And what was interesting was in between the surgeries, and, you know, we have four children, raising them and soccer games and all of that, we would just put it to the back of our mind. We would just go on with life because it became a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
getting blood tests and CAT scans and, you know, all of that. And so we didn't want it to define our life, but we just worked around it.
Oh, yeah. I know you guys just, that's what you said, is that you just kept going and kept going and kept going. And, you know, okay, it's time to take Elder back to the doctor and get another shunt put in or whatever, and, you know, okay, he's done. Get him back out. He's got to coach soccer. He's got to do something.
Exactly. But that was all him. He had such a positive attitude. And the only thing he would always ask was, am I going to be able to coach soccer? You know, can I still work? But other than that, you know, he just kept going.
Mm-hmm. Amazed me that he had eventually gotten a position with the high school.
Yes.
As a soccer coach.
That was his bucket list, you know, that he didn't realize it was. But being a recreational coach, you know, like a dad coach, to be offered a position as a soccer coach at a high school, that was amazing for him.
And so he took them to the champions.
That's right. They had never won a championship, and they won for that league. The girls' soccer team won the championship.
Yeah. And when he became a soccer coach, he knew nothing about soccer.
Well, right, and that's was always
that's a Brazilian. Joke. And you're saying that's a Brazilian that knows nothing about soccer.
Yeah, they were. They said, "Okay, you're Brazilian. You've got to coach. You've got to coach soccer." And he told them, "You know what? I've never played. I love watching the game, but I've never played." And they said, "Don't worry. You know, we'll teach you."
Yeah, we have schools.
Yeah, and so it was really funny. And then the parents, who saw that he was Brazilian and that their child was playing on his team, they were so happy. They said, oh, my goodness, we have a Brazilian soccer coach.
Well, they automatically think Pele.
You know? Right.
Flipping up and kicking backwards and, you know, doing the whole Pele thing. I still think that from when I was in my early 20s, I guess.
Right.
At what point in the 12 years, a year before, 2 years, did you guys realize that this was not going to end good?
That was about 2 years before he died, and he started getting desperate, and he was looking for a cure. Because before, even though every year he had surgery, every year technically he was cured, because once you remove cancer from your body, anything that you don't see, it's not really there. So it felt like he had no cancer in his body, and that he was cured, you know. And but after it had metastasized and it was, he had multiple tumors in his lungs, and it was in his brain and in his bones, he knew that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to find a cure. There wasn't going to be a surgery. And it took a while for it to really hit him that that was the realization, that that was the fact that there wasn't going to be a surgery. And even though there was chemotherapy and there was radiation for the bone, that just was prolonging his life, and he did not like that. Mm-hmm. He'd rather accept that he's going to die from the cancer than to pretend and keep trying to prolong his life.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Bobby Jean, I know you're sitting there chomping.
Oh, well, it's just so delightful to have a chance to chat with you, Carol. It's a wonderful book. It's quite moving. And I'm sure for anyone who is also dealing with this in a family or with a loved one, it will really speak volumes. I found your writing to be very deft, that you were taking us through this journey that you and the family and he were on, but you were not overly melodramatic, or, you know, you really were just sharing it with us. You must have kept journals. Your memory on conversations and events, and this happened, and we had this party, and then we bought the boat, and, you know.
Right.
I thought, oh, she's got to be great at keeping a calendar and keeping notes. How did you kind of keep track of your life together?
You know, it's interesting because I do have a good memory with stories, you know, things that happen. And I always tell the kids, even now, they'll forget something. I'll say, well, just ask me because I remember your life better than you remember your life. But I realized I had to go back because dates were important. I didn't want to miss anything. And so I did go back in my calendar for days, you know, that we went on trips and things that we did, just to jog my memory. But one of the things that I find really interesting that happened, when we had gone to City of Hope, and this was early on in the 12 years, there was a woman sitting in the waiting room, and she had this thick binder. And she was going through, and she was clearly a patient, and she was going through the binder, and she had every lab test, every mm-hmm. result, every surgery report in this binder. And I thought to myself, you know, that's a really good idea. Yeah, I should do something like that, being his advocate. And so I kept something like just like that. So when I started writing the book and I got a little confused and I wasn't sure about dates, I went right to it, and I relived over and over again going through that, you know, how, what happened, you know, pretty much. And that just kind of connected, you know, what we were doing, playing soccer, you know, what the kids were doing. But my Johnny Bernhardt, who was a person who edited my manuscript, she told me in the beginning to write from the heart. Mm-hmm. She said, and she told me that after I'd already given her a couple of chapters, and she could probably see when I was writing from my head and when I was writing from my heart, you know, I was trying to sound good or whatever. And when she told me to write from my heart, it just flowed. It just mm-hmm. came out. And that was the best advice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Johnny's been on this show.
Right. Mm-hmm. Her too. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Her and your publisher.
Yeah, you have everybody on
your
show.
Yeah, everybody you deal with has been on this show. In fact, almost every writer in America has been on this show, I think.
Well, I felt that a lot of what you shared, that you shared about keeping track, and that you were his advocate, and that you would ask him how much do you want to know, and he seemed to sort of only want to know what was important, immediate, and you always had the big picture. And I thought, you know, that's what a great lesson that is for those of us that maybe have not yet encountered this. And I found that very practical advice, and thought, you know, I that's what I will, you know, maybe I should go get that binder and have it ready.
Oh, geez.
Well, having an advocate, makes a huge difference.
Yeah, because you just don't know when suddenly you're going to be hit with trauma like this.
Right. And I know for me, when I'm told bad news. I can't hear it. I can't remember, like, what did they say? And, you know, and so you do need somebody else who's going to go in there and ask the hard questions. And it shouldn't be the patient, because they should just be, you know, you hear all this talk about, you know, the way to fight especially cancer, you know, is to have a positive attitude, be calm, be serene. And you can't do that and then be in there fighting the fight for somebody.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be tough having to be the buffer between the doctors and your husband.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And know so much more than he knows.
Right.
And how much do I say?
Right. And also, I would read every report. So I'm reading the surgery reports. I'm reading, you know, all of the biopsies and everything. And so when it's time to talk to the doctor, I almost wanted to say, just look at me and have a conversation. Helder's just there, you know, for HIPAA laws or whatever.
But, yeah, he's just holding the chair down.
Right.
You know, California's death with dignity law is based on the Oregon law. And, of course, it hasn't been there that long. You being in the legal field, I know you weren't a lawyer, but you were in the legal field for 25 years. Were you a supporter of that law before Helder?
I never even knew the law existed, or that there was, bill, and that there were lobbyists and people were fighting for it. Now, he was tracking it, you know, in the news and whenever he saw it. So so I never really thought about it. I mean, I did. Oh, we did watch on a program the Oregon, you know, the I can't think of her name now, the woman who she was on national TV, who ended her life with the medication.
That was kind of like a movie.
Yes.
And then she followed her from her first diagnosis to...
Right, that's right.
Yeah, that was actually very interesting.
Very interesting.
But the doctors there made it a lot easier than they do here.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's so very true. But that was when Helder said, that's what I want to do. So, you know, I always say, when it comes to did I agree with it, I agree with pro-choice. I mean, that's what I say. I agree that it should be made available, especially, you know, having seen him go through everything he went through, and that's he knew that's what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I thought, well, yes, it should be made available to everybody. But I didn't see how it was going to be possible, because this is California, and everybody sues everybody.
You know, so. California always takes every good idea and adds 10%. God. You know, Oregon made it very, very simple. I mean, it's not easy to get it, but once you're terminal and you're stage four and you know that you've only got X amount of time, your doctor's more than happy to help you out. Not California.
Right.
You gotta find people. Right. And then, you know, bribe them to sign your paperwork off.
Well, you know, and when you talked about picking the date, you know, because and this is something a lot of people just don't think about.
Right.
I mean, first of all the things that have to go into picking the date, who you want there and that kind of stuff, and who you don't want there and who you don't want to know.
Right.
Which I found fascinating when I was reading that, and that because of, you know, some people's religious objections, and you were... didn't want to have to deal with, or he didn't want to have to deal with some folks that kind of wanted to lecture him, I guess, probably.
Absolutely, and he was really well aware of that. As a matter of fact, there was on National Public Radio somebody who wanted to interview him, and he said no, because he was afraid that if it was made public what he was planning on doing, then there would be groups who would try to talk him out of it or shame his kids, you know, our kids, for having him make that decision.
Yeah. I totally get that.
Yeah.
I did too. Mm-hmm.
There was another special about a young lady, and I don't remember if it was in Washington or Oregon, but she was very young, under 30.
Maynard, I think her last name was Maynard.
Is she the one that had the pool party?
No, but I read about that.
Yeah, she had the pool party and died in the chaise lounge out at the pool with the party going on.
Yes, I read about that.
It was very cool.
Yes. Yeah.
This chick really had it going on. She had a big pool party.
She didn't have children.
No, or a husband.
Right.
But she invited all of her friends to this pool party, and they were drinking and barbecuing, and she took her cocktail and went to sleep on her chaise lounge.
That's right. I read about that. Yeah. That was pretty wild.
It was wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very cool that Helder got to do it you know, his way.
That's right.
And with his kids there.
That's right. Right.
And it was very lucky for you that all the kids were able to be there.
Yes. Right. And that was important, that if they wanted to be there, mm. that they could be there. But it's an unusual request and situation.
It's tough. When my dad died, my sister had called me on June 30th and said, you better get up here, Dad's. So there was no flights. It was 4th of July weekend, and there's no flights available, and they lived in Albany, Oregon. So I jump mm-hmm. in my car, and I start heading north. Well, I got really tired, and around Corning, I think it was, I finally pulled over at a bus stop or a truck stop in a rest area and just, you know, crashed out in the back seat of my car. And I woke up, somebody was yelling my name, and I woke up and got in front and took off again. And my sister called and says, don't hurry.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's the thing. Helder had gone to a support group, mm-hmm. a cancer support group in Pasadena, and for many years, and he saw so many times, so many people died alone, or, you know, that 5 minutes where you go or you want to mm-hmm. take a nap or get something to eat. And they say that's, you know, usually when the person feels like it's okay to go. I'm not sure about that, but I do know that Helder wanted to make sure that he would be able to have his loved ones around him, since that was possible to do that.
I liked what he said at the very last. It was very cool. I'm going to leave now.
I'm leaving now.
I'm leaving now. Yeah.
That was his last words. I'm leaving now. Yeah, he was Helder up until the very last moment. That was the wonderful thing about it, that to leave with that kind of a memory. But yeah, at first when he started feeling it, he said, you know, I'm starting to feel it. And we were all just moved closer towards him. And he goes, okay, you guys are freaking me out now. Which is just the line he would say.
Back off.
Did you get, I know you mentioned that when you realized that it was terminal, then a lot of what kicks in at that point is, okay, there's got to be some other experimental stuff that we haven't tried. Right. Did you get in it? I mean, back in the, I guess it was the 80s and 90s, we had, and 70s actually, we had the Laetrile deal, you know, where everybody was, oh, you know, it's coffee enemas.
I remember that.
Mango steam juice.
Yes.
We had everything left at our doorstep, but that was in the first couple of years. I think people gave up after that. But yeah, we had people trying to tell us, you know, that they had the herbs or, you know, the answer. But we did also have a friend who drove down to Mexico and did the whole fruit and vegetable.
And the coffee enemas
and, right? Yeah. And he barely made it back and he died again without his family. Yeah. So that was never an option.
That's what Steve McQueen did, and he came back and died.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Back then, he might have even been dead before he came back across
the border.
I think
he died in El Paso.
And
Farrah Fawcett. I mean, in Juarez.
They did a documentary, and she spent the time that she had left, you know, trying to find the cure.
Chasing rabbits.
Right.
You know?
All the scam artists come out, and because they know they can take advantage of people who are desperate.
Mrs. Bell?
Yes?
Do you have your ad tonight, or should I do it for you?
Yes, I have a new one.
Oh, you do?
Oh my gosh.
We're gonna take a couple minutes here, Carol, and we're going to do some ads, and then we'll be back with you. So hang tough, and Bobby, you're on.
Has cabin fever got you down? Turn your mind away from winter storms and think spring. Now's the time to refresh your outlook. What events do you have coming up? An outdoor music festival? A trip to the mountains? Perhaps a horseback ride adventure. Out West Shop has just what you need to revive your spirits and reboot your wardrobe. Cool, hip, boho top, stylish boots from Dan Post, and great-looking jackets are just a few of the fashion essentials offered for men and ladies. Find it all at www.outwestshop.com. Enter coupon code SPRING and save $10 on your order. Call toll-free 1-877-340-9378. Out West delivers the West door-to-door, coast-to-coast, and around the world.
Oh, and it's always a nice day out West.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. You're leaving on vacation. Your tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? All Dogs Rule, day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged buddy a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services, including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and additional training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home with that smile on his face, we'll leave you wondering whose vacation was better. And we all know it was the dog's. Arf, arf, your microphone's turned off. Good God, bro. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership that is modeled on how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet clients' goals. Creative Edge is your brand and your future. And as Mickey Mickelson is the publicist there, so give them a holler. You can go to their website, which is creativeedge-publicity.com, and give Mickey a call. And he's one of the best in the biz. In fact, he's Bob's, and he's my publicist. Okay, wait a minute. Okay.
Yes, he is?
Yes, he is. And, Carol, if you would like, I can get you a publicist. And he's really, really, really inexpensive, and he's really good. He'll keep you busy. Trust me. So we are back in the studio now. We are with Carol Graham Pereira and her book, A Death with Dignity, Heller's Story, The End of Life Option, which is a nice little throw in there at the end.
Right.
And it actually is an option.
Right.
Not everybody has that option.
Right. And you don't have to use the option once you get the medication,
right.
too.
Yeah, you can choose to flush it if you want.
Right.
Yeah. Or if you just happen to go to sleep on your own and then, you know.
Yeah.
Which is the goal?
Then you can loan it to your brother.
Oh. Or somebody you don't like.
Or someone else.
You know, when you decided to write the book, did you ask the kids? Because you got four children.
Right.
And did you decide to ask the kids and what they would like to include or if they wanted their names in it?
Right. So they were very happy to write that there would be a memoir written about their dad. And I think that's more how they saw it, not so much that they would be in the book. They didn't really think about that, so I didn't discuss it too much, and I wasn't sure how this was going to go as I was writing, but clearly they were part of Helder's story. But for the most part, you know, when they heard about it, it was more of an honor to have a memoir written about their dad. Mm-hmm. Now, I asked them when I was still in manuscript form, you know, please read the manuscript and let me know what you think. 0 out of 4 were able to read it, and I completely understand, but I couldn't wait, and I had the book published, so it was one of those things here.
As evidenced by, you could have put the treehouse in the book.
Right.
And I did.
Right.
So
right.
They couldn't read it because they didn't have time, or they couldn't read it because they couldn't bring themselves
to it? It was probably too close at that point.
Yeah, it was too painful to read, yeah. Yes.
Now, this is a question that I've never thought I would ever ask in this program, but I will now. Did you write this for your edification and just happened to get published? Or did you write it with the thought of having it published?
That's a great question. I did not think about it being published. No, not at all. I just thought, I'm going to do the footwork. I'm going to write this book and see what happens. And I didn't even know what it meant to get a book published. Mm-hmm. And so when I crossed that bridge, I found out that self-publishing is the trend now, and I knew nothing about self-publishing. So how grateful and blessed do I feel that I was picked up by a publisher? Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Brother Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. I was very happy.
Yeah, it's actually, we call it independent publishing now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Self-publishing has such a nasty ring to it. It sounds like somebody pirated your dog.
Yeah.
But those are the courses that you would take. It's called self-publishing, yes. Or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anymore, publishing it's independent. 101. It's independent publishing. And Melissa has been a friend of the show since almost when we went on the air. So,
that's
and she's
great.
Been on, and she talked about a Brother Blackbird Publishing when she
right.
was here.
Right.
She wasn't in studio, but we had her on the phone. And she's a nice lady.
Right.
Nice
yes,
lady.
Wonderful.
And I think, I don't know, but I kind of think that you were probably one of her first authors that really hooked up with her.
Right. It was new business for her as
right.
far as the publishing part.
Right.
Yeah. And so I wasn't really sure what all this entailed as far as negotiations or anything. She mm-hmm. made it so easy and mm-hmm. so wonderful. She read the manuscript, and, you know, all it takes for me is that she loved the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now comes the question that we're going to break away from the book for just a few minutes. How did you hook up with Melissa? And and you also mentioned
Johnny
right. Bernhard. Yeah,
right. So after my husband passed away, one of his friends called me and to give their condolences. And we were talking, and I was relaying one of the funny stories about Helder, and I just casually said, you know, a book could be written about this guy. And she said, you should do it. You should write a book. And I thought, oh, okay. You know, that was the first time I ever thought about it. And then she said, I know someone who was Johnny. And she said, I'll put Johnny in touch with you. And I, this is by email. I sent Johnny an email and told her, summarize what I thought the memoir would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And she loved the story. And she said, you know, let's do this. So Johnny, after the book was finished, I mean, it was still in manuscript form, Johnny had gone to one of the book conferences, ran into Melissa, told Melissa about Helder.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's the selling point, is Helder. And Melissa liked the story, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that happened.
Well, Johnny and Melissa worked for another company together.
Oh, okay.
So they knew each other anyway, so... But, yeah, Melissa's good people, and so is Johnny.
Yes, they are wonderful.
In fact, when we had Johnny on the show, you were here with us, weren't you, Bobby?
I think so.
And she was so funny, and we were talking about some of the things that she did and some of the ways that she did things, and it was pretty funny. She was talking about her husband leaving him out in the cold and having to write when he's in a rented room, another part of the house.
Oh, my gosh. So, Carol, are you you've written a book.
Mm.
And you've got a background. Are you thinking about writing more books?
Okay, that was the question. That's also another question. A good question.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I hadn't thought about it until after this book was published. A lot of people have come to me and told me how their loved one died.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many interesting stories on how people die. And not only my own grief group that I've been in, which that alone is just a few people, but everybody has such an interesting way that their loved one died. So I thought that I might write a book telling other people's stories specifically of what happens at the end, how people die. Because it's mm-hmm. when it's not mm-hmm. planned, it's
yeah.
very interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the writers that we had on, Caroline Giamanco.
Mm-hmm. Caroline.
She did the other book. She did the first one. What was it called?
The
Boonie Hat
Bandit.
Right.
Don
and then she did the other one about all the families.
The families.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It wasn't her story, but it was all the stories that she had heard.
Mm,
similar
right,
to
right.
what you're thinking about.
Right,
really.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how well it's done, but, you know, we talked to her. She's been on the show a couple times. But, you know, like I said, we get all the writers. They all come running back, too.
I have a kind of related question. It's still a little bit about process.
This
just flowed, and you talked about that when you took her advice and you wrote from your heart. Did it take you very long to write it, or did you still had kids and maybe still working? Were you setting aside some time every day, or just a little bit about the process maybe of getting it on paper?
Great question,
sure.
Bobby.
Yeah, I started, so my husband passed away December 26, 2016. I started March of 2017, and I just wrote every single day. I mean, there was a period of weeks or maybe a month that I wasn't able to because of family situations, but I always went back to it, and I finished it in with less than a year. And a lot of people were amazed that, you know, where did you find the time to write?
Yeah.
But sometimes I would write till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it just, you know, as I was in the middle of something and it was in my heart and coming out on the paper, I couldn't exactly, you know, just stop. I would just keep going with it. Mm-hmm. So that's, I just let it go the way it was supposed to.
Well, there's a lot of emotion in this book, I will tell you.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's well placed. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's...
Well, getting through the first chapter must have been...
Had to have been tough, because the first chapter was brutal.
Well, and I think that's probably why my kids couldn't read it. Yeah, you know, they did, a couple of them did say that, you know, that after that first chapter, no, that's okay. We can't do this. But, yeah, that was difficult. But it was also a great experience to know that it was... now recorded.
Mm-hmm.
This has now been documented. This is what happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was really, it felt really good to know. Yes, a lot of people ask me, wasn't it difficult for me to write this? I always felt that it was such a great experience to know that it was being documented and it was in writing. And mm-hmm. if anything happened to me, you know,
right.
let it happen right after I write that last page, you know.
Sure.
Because,
mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you could get it down. Right. Did you find that as you went through the editing process, were there some stories that you decided to keep private and not share, or were very difficult to write and you chose to keep them private?
No, actually, I put it all out there.
You put it all out there.
I put it all out there. And then between Johnny and Melissa, they decided, you know, what wasn't very relevant or, you know, what didn't mm-hmm. really fit. And so I let them do their magic, and that made sense. So, yeah, I kind of just put everything in there, and then we cleaned it up.
Well, that's what everybody does. I mean, you know. Well, it's a terrific job for a first-time writer, I have to tell you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're very welcome.
Thank
very,
you.
Very much so. Very much
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's... Okay, the question... Okay, Bobby, I'm going to do it this week.
You do it.
Okay, I'm going to do it. I'm not even going to let Bob do it.
You want me to do it?
You can do it.
No, you do it. You do it.
She has no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, trust me, Carol, it will get done. The name of this program is The Writer's Block. Mm. Did you have it while you were writing your book? And if you did, how did you get out of it?
I did. And I think that when I just couldn't go back to it, I mean, there was a time where I just thought, you know, I don't know where to go from this. I went back to my big binder and I went through the actual documents and the facts, and going through that just reminded me of different situations and experiences that we had together. And for some reason that loosened it up. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to start writing again.
Hmm. Good answer. Much better than I don't have writer's block, which we get a lot now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody wants to cop to it.
I'm a newbie.
Yes, you are. But a good newbie.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yes.
Yeah. And don't change.
Don't change. And don't go in on anyone else's program.
Okay.
Because you're never going to get the experience you're having on this one.
No, she's ready now.
I believe that, though.
Well, see, yeah. Aren't you comfortable now?
Absolutely.
See?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah, it's probably...
I could do it again.
Well, I'm telling you, it's probably the tequila Bob brought in the flask. But we're not... See, they can't see us, so we don't know.
Can I ask one more question?
Of course. Does it include wine and chocolates?
Because we do, we know that a lot of new writers listen. I did see a very nice newspaper article where you made an appearance at a local bookstore, and I actually know exactly where that bookstore is, the Flint Ridge.
Oh, yes.
Bookstore. So are you doing some author appearances, and kind of how do you prepare for that?
Well, and I also had one at Vroman's.
Big time.
Where Hillary Clinton had hers. And
at the same time?
No.
Okay, same
way. I couldn't share
Not
the
so
stage.
Much.
No. But I think to prepare for it was I had done an interview, but it was an online interview where I was given the questions ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And I always refer back to that interview because it's nice when you know the questions ahead of time, yeah, that people are going to ask. And I just figured people will always ask sort of these same questions. Mm-hmm. And so I would just review that and felt that, you know, whatever came up, because that's usually the difficult for a new writer. You know, time is when it's the question and answer period, and people are going to ask questions. You don't know what questions they're going to ask. Mm-hmm. So I always did that, but I'm kind of a wing it, obviously, person. So I just would show up and hope to be calm and make sense.
That's how we do it. See, we could have handed you a sheet of questions and you'd have been really prepared, and then we would have just totally thrown that away.
Yeah, because we don't come in with a sheet of questions.
We don't come in with sheets of questions.
No, I tried to ask you what question you're going to ask me, and you said, I don't know.
Yeah, she did. She did ask the other night. She goes, so do you guys know what you're going to ask me? Do you have a sheet of questions? I said, nope.
Carol, I always have a sheet, but they don't let me
use it. We're seat of the pants interviewers. We're high professionals is what we are here.
We don't even ask your name.
I know. Oh, wow. This has been fun. We're running out of time here. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have Bobby, what else would you like to find out from our guest?
I think we actually covered all my questions.
We probably did.
I had one quick question for you.
Go ahead.
You mentioned the lab tests, and I imagine the last year or two, that happened ad nauseum. And who had the tougher time dealing with that, you or him?
Going to get the lab work
and
all
the results
stuff.
Dealing with it over and over and over.
Oh, I dealt with it, right. Yeah. He would just say, tell me where to show up and what time, and he wouldn't even ask for the results. And I became really good at just either looking for them online or, you know, I had already signed all the documents that I needed to so I can get the information, and then I would let him know, or I would ask, did you want the results? And he'd say, I don't know, do I? That would be, you know, that's sort of how mm-hmm. he dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, well, honestly, Bob, I mean, think about it just for a second. Mm-hmm. If you were diagnosed and you were that terminal and
do you want to know?
In that short of period
really
of time,
you know?
Do you want to know?
Yeah.
You know, another thing I thought was so interesting, and I appreciated that you shared it, was how much time in the latter part of his life he watched TV. Mm. And that was a bit of a struggle for you because you kind of wondered, well, why doesn't he want to be with me or with the family?
Right.
And you cover that in the book. And I found it from a time in my life that was very helpful. It helped me understand a dear relative that was like that in the last year of his life. And I finally sort of went like, oh, that's why.
Right.
So you share a lot of things that might not seem important, but to the reader, gosh, they could just be leaping off the page.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it was TV and video games, yeah?
Right. Yeah. But at the end, yeah, it was he couldn't play video games anymore, although he loved that, and that was a great, great distraction. But the TV, it was documentaries, animal, that was it was very soothing for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was soothing for him. It was an escape for him.
It was an escape for him.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Very annoying for me.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the name of the book is A Death with Dignity, Helder's Story. It's the end of the line option. You can go to her website, which is helderstory.org.
That's correct.
Whew. I did that from memory.
That
Don't
good.
Ask me how.
That's
good. Okay, and she is published by Brother Mockingbird and Melissa Carrigy. And she's a great, great, great story. And where else can they find you? Email?
Amazon.
Well, yeah.
Oh,
available
on
Amazon and all online booksellers, I'm sure.
Right.
Okay.
And on the website, yeah.
And email comes off your website.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And this is, of course, Carol Graham Pereira. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure.
Wow, that was great.
It was fun having you. And it's such a subject that...
We all got to face at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm glad we could make you chuckle at one point or another. So.
Yes, yeah.
So anyway, next week we have... who do we have next week? I know... Chuck Redman, And his name of his new book is A Cottonwood Stand. Chuck's a lot of fun. He's going to be in studio next week with Russ and myself on March 7th, I believe. We have Jim Jones from Bobby Jean's Stomping Ground. In fact, you ought to get him in the studio with you, Bobby Jean. That way we don't have to hunt him down.
Well, I actually thought that might be fun and come over here.
Yeah,
and
come over there.
Bring his guitar.
Right here.
Yeah, bring his guitar.
Yeah.
And next Tuesday, which is a special writer's block, we have, of course, Tom Lang, who was the chief detective for the O.J. Simpson's case, will be on the air with us. And he's written a book about the Wonderland murders that took place in 1981.
I remember.
And he'll be here in the studio with us. He lives in Simi, so he's probably going to be riding in with me, and we'll get a chance to really chat about it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Pick him up a Smash Burger.
And a Smash Burger, yeah, I have to take him to Smash Burger. Okay. of course, April is coming up with the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. Mm-hmm. Bobby will be in attendance. Bobby Jean will be here.
Boots on the ground.
And April 9th, we have another special Tuesday. It's Junie Fisher will be on the air with us. Bobby Jean and Jim Bell will be in studio, which will be fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then she'll be here for the Thursday show as well. And then, of course, they'll be at the Cowboy Festival Saturday and Sunday. And I am not able to make it this year, and I really feel bad. But it is what it is.
Yeah, you and Johnny Box.
Yeah. Johnny's not coming this year?
No, I'm joking. Is he?
He was invited.
No, I don't think so.
Johnny's a great guy. Bob and I really just kind of screwed him over last year.
But it was fun.
It was fun. I actually have video, so I'll tell you the story when we're off the air. It's pretty funny. Okay, for Bob Brill, myself, Jim Christina, and Bobby Jean Bell in New Mexico, this is Killed Another Thursday Evening. And thank you so much for joining us, and we will be back next week, Tuesday and Thursday. And for us, we are out of here.